Cotty Park one day.
Oh.
And I also used to be at McAllister in St. Paul.
Oh, yeah, right.
Promoting
right.
Death of Lupin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, good. Is that where you went?
What?
Is that where you went?
Oh, no, I didn't go to... I went to Augsburg, which is in the... It's right outside of downtown Minneapolis.
Oh, okay.
It's a small private liberal arts school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, I want to thank you again for taking the time
to
speak with us. I know there's a lot of things we could talk about, but I want to focus on the environmental crisis because I think that's one of the most pressing, like, urgent issues of our time. And I don't want to waste time talking about things that, I'm not going to say they're not important, but they're not,
right.
I don't think they're as important as this issue.
Well, that is the issue. I mean, the fact is that the, you know, those corporate forces, which are now have no fetters, no impediments, you know, and Karl Marx understood that, that unfettered capitalism is a revolutionary force, turn everything into a commodity. Human beings become commodities, and the natural world becomes a commodity that you exploit for profit until exhaustion or collapse. And that's why the environmental crisis is intimately twinned with the economic crisis. So the fossil fuel industry essentially is quite willing to destroy the ecosystem on which human beings depend for existence for money. And that's why the whole resistance movement and the Occupy movement is essential, because these corporations control the internal levers of power. We are not going to be able to halt this destruction by traditional political mechanisms. We're going to have to do it from the outside, and we're going to have to do it fast if we're going to survive.
Exactly. Now, many people who care about the environment they're considering more militant direct actions to protect and preserve what's left of our natural world. What advice would you give to people of this kind of mindset?
Well, they have now set in place a series of quote-unquote anti-terrorism laws that they know they can use towards any kind of militant activism, including environmental activism. We already have some in maximum security prisons. That's what they want. I don't think now is the time. I mean, you know, I talk to Derek Jensen a lot. And Derek and I disagree on many things, although we have a very respectful relationship. I think Derek doesn't understand the nature of violence. Derek does call for, supports the possibility of an escalation of tactics. He's called for blowing up dams, I mean, this kind of stuff. You can't do that kind of activity unless you have very broad popular support. If you look at it as an insurgency, any successful insurgency can only survive when the vast majority of the population is on its side. And we're not there yet. I think the first thing to do is, through methods of nonviolence, begin to draw the numbers into the street. I think one of my frustrations with the Occupy movement is that they weren't always as attuned to the environmental crisis. Not that it wasn't part of the message, or not that they didn't get it, but I didn't sense that they were always cognizant of its urgency. And I think that, you know, a lot of this is about battling back against corporate systems of indoctrination that have filled people's heads with garbage about the Kardashians I can't even keep track of it. I mean, what's the latest? I don't know. The latest celebrity meltdown and that's a hard, this is a culture utterly awash in lies and spectacle and entertainment, and violence is entertainment, and sex is, and it's done on purpose. And it anesthetizes the population, keeps them kind of brain dead. And our job is to break through that, and it's not going to be easy. But I think the most successful way to break through is to begin to bring the numbers out in the street. So any kind of militant activity, like blowing up the XL pipeline or something, I think would be not a good idea. I mean, I think it would
not right
now. Security state would, well, I mean, I don't even want to advocate for that kind of stuff, because once you start using plastic explosives, people get killed. I mean, I just don't, I really want to make nonviolence work. I've lived in societies that have become violent, the former Yugoslavia, the civil war in El Salvador. And, you know, violence is a poison, and it infects anyone who uses it. And you know, violence is always tragic. You know, people can be pushed to an extent where they have no option. The people in Sarajevo had no option. The Serbs clearly would have annihilated a third of the city and driven the rest out. We knew because we saw what happened in the Drina Valley. So, okay, or in El Salvador, the death squads were killing 700 to 1,000 people a month in El Salvador. And so you understood why. But boy, that is something I just want to fight against. And I think that it is possible through nonviolence, if you could get the numbers, to begin to discredit and isolate the state. And I think right now that has to be what we do. And that, I really disagree with Derek. I mean, Derek talks about, you know, escalating tactics. And I just, it terrifies me to go there.
Dustin, you want to?
Yeah, in St. Paul, I asked you a question about Jensen, and it was about violence, and you responded the same way you just did now, which is, but I wanted to take it to a different issue that Jensen writes about. And what I want your view on is civilization in cities, is that even sustainable? Like, can 12 million people live sustainably in New York City for the rest of time?
No.
I know, and that's...
Yeah, I mean, Derek's, you know, there's a lot I agree with Derek on. And, you know, Derek, when I did my attack on the Black Bloc, I called Derek. First of all, he knows the Black Bloc better than I do. But second of all, I found him a really important ally because Derek is willing to consider the escalation of tactics. And I felt, even though I'm not willing to go there. And so I thought that, you know, I thought his quotes were really smart. And I mean, the hyper-masculinity, the hyper-purity, you know, all this stuff was really pretty dead on. I thought, you know, he really added a lot to that. But no, ultimately it's not. And
so should we have some type of movement back to the rural areas, or like how can we live sustainably?
Well, because we have to. You know, the people who survive are going to have access to plots of agricultural land without question. And I don't know when that's coming, but it's coming. You know, Cornell University did a study that if New York State was self-sufficient, i.e. if it had to feed itself, it could support only 33% of the population. But, you know, we're all entranced with these electronic hallucinations, and since we're talking about Derek, I'll be open that I stole that line from him. Usually I don't credit him, but I don't know today. But he's right. I mean, we're entranced with these electronic hallucinations, and we're like most dying civilizations or empires, we're just not even remotely aware of what's happening as the walls come down around us. I mean, if there is not a radical reversal, and I don't see at this point any sign that there will be, then we're in for really catastrophic.
Quick follow-up question on that. What role do you think technology plays in the future?
Well, because technology is God. I mean, that's... Technology has replaced God. Everybody thinks that science and technology will save them.
Right.
You know, that we don't have to worry about it because, like, you know, they'll think of something. And, you know, progress is inevitable. We're always going to, you know, and that has lulled people into kind of complacency. Because technology is pretty amazing. It's pretty self-destructive. I mean, you know, half of all electricity comes from coal, which is killing us, killing the Appalachian Mountains, killing, well, it's poisoning the water, poisoning the air. And so, yeah, we're like junkies. I mean, we're like drug addicts. You know, even the rational addicts among us can say, oh yeah, like, well, the smack's killing us, and then we reach for the needle. That's basically what we're doing.
Okay, I just read a book by Jeremy Rifkin called The Empathic Civilization, and well, he paints this whole utopia of like this third technological revolution. Basically, what I want to get at is, do you think we're going to go the route which is more like the Jensen, like primitivist, where we're going to have to go back to like the more like the...
Well, first of all, I want to say Derek's newest book is why I am not an anarcho-primitivist. I don't think if I had to put my money down, it doesn't look too good.
For the technology.
I mean, you know, Ronald Wright's written about this. He wrote a really smart book called The Short History of Progress. It doesn't look too good. It looks pretty bad. I mean, one of the reasons that I sort of will go out and do what I do at my age is because I have kids, and we've so betrayed, you know, our children. And I at least want them to know that their father fought back, even if I'm not successful.
You were crying in Times Square.
Well, it's about my kids. I mean, you know, I'm out there for them, and I look at them, and it just breaks my heart. I mean, my sons, at least four. I mean, my littlest one. I mean, his favorite book is Out of the Blue. It's pictures of narwhals. And look, you know, within his lifetime, if there's not a radical change in how we relate to the planet, every single one of those sea creatures will be dead. I mean, that's the reality. And it's a really painful reality to be aware of when you have children. And, you know, most people aren't aware of it because they're caught up, you know, they work and they're caught, you know, they come home and they check out. But when you are aware of it, it really hurts.
Now, I know you have a background in theology and in the seminary, and I wanted to know, how does your faith or your understanding of Scripture shape your views and attitude towards nature and the natural world?
I'm not particularly religious, I mean, in a formal sense.
Right.
But I certainly come out of that ethic, and I think still subscribe to it. I mean, because I was around so much violence and war, really hate violence, you know, at a visceral level of any kind. And I do believe that, you know, as I said earlier, the good can attract the good. That, you know, when you go out and do what's moral and right, especially in a totalitarian society, even though everyone around you remains passive, it has a way of shaming them. I mean, Havel is a good example of that. He wasn't a great president, but he was a great dissident. And, you know, that I think that certainly comes out of a religious background.
Right. Now, you know, Rick Santorum recently said that to elevate nature above man is essentially, I guess, a mistake. And he's saying that man should be elevated above nature and that this is actually a theological standpoint.
Well, Rick Santorum's a moron.
But this is
wouldn't trust him for anything, especially an interpretation of the
but
Bible.
This is a very common thread that runs throughout the GOP.
Well, among the Christian right, we're Christian heretics. I mean, they've completely distorted the Bible to serve the worst aspects of empire and American capitalism. It is heretical, and the failure of the liberal church to call them out on it shows how spineless they are. I mean, Jesus didn't come to make us rich. Jesus' primary concern was with the oppressed and the poor. Jesus hated temporal power. There's a whole scene in the Bible of him being offered temporal power and refusing it. You know, it is just an utter distortion of the Bible, and these people do it. They manipulate people in despair by sort of telling them that Jesus, you know, when they pray for money, Jesus will give it to them or send their red check in. And I mean, it's really manipulative and awful. And a lot of the charlatans like, you know, Joel Osteen and Robertson, all these figures, they become, you know, Robertson's personal worth, we don't know exactly, is somewhere between $500 million and $1 billion. I mean, it's just really shameful. And the fact that the traditional church won't denounce these people shows how they've essentially abrogated their moral and religious voice within the society.
Well, speaking about the people that are reaping that money off of the system, who are the patriots within the system right now? You know, do you consider Kucinich, Ellsberg, who are
the
top 10?
Yeah, of course. I mean, all the top 10. Well, I mean, Daniel Ellsberg, Cornel West, Bill McKibben, Wendell Berry. I mean, these are all people who have decided that civil disobedience is the only, including Wendell Berry, is the only route we have left. And so they're certainly the people that I look to. Chomsky, I mean, Chomsky's...
Howard Zinn before he passed away.
Yeah, I never met Zinn. I'm a huge admirer of Zinn.
Did you meet Abby Martin from Media Roots on the West Coast? I think she interviewed you.
I don't remember.
She's about in mid 20s. She just got hired by Russia Today. She's a 25-year-old journalist.
I don't know. I mean, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'll ask another. What do you think about how we create money in this country? And your philosophy on like how money should be created and systems of exchange.
Well, I mean, the fundamental problem is that, you know, we treat money as if it's real, i.e., we think money can make money. Now, as soon as you believe that, then it's just gambling. And what we're watching Wall Street do now is rebuild the bubble that they built before with all of the money that they looted from the U.S. Treasury and the zero-interest loans. I mean, look, Goldman Sachs is a company that's bailed out by the American taxpayer, has zero-interest loans, and all it does is bet. Part of the reason gasoline prices are rising is because they're buying all these futures, you know, holding them, hoarding them, and then selling them at a profit. I mean, you can go all the way back to Solon in ancient Greece. I mean, when these kinds of figures in the 17th century, speculators were hung. When these people actually run your economy, then you end up with collapse, and they know it. I mean, they are just stealing as much as they can, as fast as they can, before they get out the door. I mean, they are as aware of this as I am. They don't publicly say it, but they know, and it's all about personal enrichment at our expense.
What do you think when Mayor Bloomberg was just, you know, giving praise to, I think, Jamie Dimon most recently? What do you think when you see that, like when you hear that report?
Well, Bloomberg, who does Bloomberg work for? I mean, Bloomberg, you know, this is his class. I mean, he this is who he defends, this is who he protects, this is who he promotes. He never got the Occupy movement. Wouldn't he call it like fun and cathartic, and as if people who've lost their house are going down, you know, holding a party about it somewhere. I mean, it's really... Bloomberg is part of that class, but these people have just checked out from the reality of most Americans. It's like the Forbidden City, it's like Versailles, it's like any closed elite where they just don't know anymore. They have no idea what's going on or how people feel. Or
they are not connected. Politicians are not connected anymore with anybody.
Where do you see Occupy in 1 year from now?
It depends. They're going to have to. The problem with Occupy is, you know, there is right and wrong. And they're going to have to begin to make some moral decisions. And allowing people to march with them who mask their faces and taunt the cops is fucking the movement over. And if they want to do it, they can do it. And I wouldn't report them. I mean, I'm not going to be a cop. You know, I'm not going to... You know, but they can't do it with this movement or they'll kill it. And Occupy is... And that's painful because Occupy wants to be inclusive. I mean, the funny thing about Occupy is they think they're radicals, but they all function as good liberals. You know, oh, tolerance, which is a word Martin Luther King never used. Oh, you know, everybody can come. Look, there are tactics that are self-defeating. And Occupy is going to have to draw the line and say, you are welcome, but you can't do this. And that's something that many people in Occupy are finding hard to do. Because, in fact, they come infected with this liberal, which I don't have. I mean, if you come out of the tradition, especially the religious tradition, there are rights and wrongs. There are things you shouldn't do. And they just have a hard time saying that. I mean, you know, I say that with all due respect because, you know, their intentions are good. But there are very dark forces internally within this movement trying to destroy it. And they are using that opening to do it. And Occupy's got to get smart and realize that, this is a fight for life because they really want to take this thing down.
All right, thanks a lot, Chris.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you throwing us out? Is this like some corporate Starbucks policy?
No, that's what you...
No, carry on.